talk some NFL free agency, specifically from the point of view of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Breakfast with Ben's podcast today. Joining me right now to do that, it is Dale Lawley from Steelers.com. You can read him there. You can listen to him on SNR, The Drive, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays with Matt Williamson, 4 to 6. And you can hear him on the DVE pregame show with me in the hour leading up to the network pregame show. 3 hours in advance of every Steelers game. I'm on 4 hours in advance of every Steelers game. So, plenty to talk about with Dale here in the offseason. Dale, good to catch up with you again. How are things over at the South Side? Are you by yourself in the old racket court building these days?
I am by myself in the media room here, but man, they've been parading some free agents through here over the last week, and it's 2 years in a row the Steelers have been very active in the opening week of free agency.
Well, I'm glad you set it up that way, Dale, because that's exactly where I was going to go with the first part of our conversation. If you read the blogs and you check in on Twitter, you'd think that the Steelers had never made a free agent signing before with some of the reactions. Like, oh my God, what a sea change this is with Andy Weidel and Omar Khan in charge. Oh, what a different course of direction they have set from the Kevin Colbert years. And I'm like, are we just selectively remembering things here? Because what is all that different in terms of their approach this year as opposed to last? I mean, not only are they bringing in roughly the same amount of guys, they're addressing the same positions aside from Mitch Trubisky, for crying out loud. It's interior linemen and inside linebackers like Miles Jack and Mason Cole and James Daniels.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way the NFL is moving now, where some of these positions, we had a chance to talk to Landon Roberts on Monday, and he mentioned it that, you know, there are certain positions where you're going to change out almost every year. Guard is not a highly coveted or high paid position. Inside linebacker, not a high paid, position. You can change those guys out pretty easily. Same thing with safety, kind of those guys up the middle. They're important players on your team. And if you don't have those guys, you're in trouble, but they don't cost a ton. And you can find these guys in free agency pretty much every year. Some of these guys are turning into, the situation where they're free agents pretty much every year and they're just changing teams. So it is an interesting dynamic, the way things have kind of shifted here in the NFL. And I think the Steelers have shifted in that direction as well. To your point, I mean, they were very active on the opening week of free agency last year, maybe even more so than they were this year.
Why do you think that people are choosing to not remember that? Is that just like hoping to create a narrative of why things are going to be different this year now that we're going through the first full off season in the new regime and people just want to have faith? Because as you and I both seem to agree, it's not all that different of a philosophical approach.
No, I mean, I think it's just a carryover of more of the same. And as much as people, hey, I like Andy Weidel. I think he's, was a good addition to the organization. But people seem to be trying to push the narrative that somehow Andy's in charge of all this stuff and making all this stuff happen. He's part of the equation, but he's not the final say on all this stuff. That still falls on Art Rooney II. He isn't the de facto team president, and they don't make any moves without him signing off on them. So, I think Art's been more aggressive here over the last couple of years. And I think, part of it is, you're not paying a quarterback $45 million anymore. So you do have more money to spend on some of these ancillary pieces.
Dale Lawley with us. I also think that people might be, again, choosing consciously or otherwise to advance that tone because, like you had said before, with the amount of guys that switch teams at these positions, let's look at inside linebacker just as for instance. It's not like the Steelers were big spenders at that position where other teams were. In fact, let's take Tremaine Edmonds out. I think he's the outlier. But I kind of thought TJ Edwards, David Long, maybe Kendricks, those guys didn't go for as much as I was expecting. And I was thinking that the Steelers, if the numbers came into the range that those guys signed for, might go for the higher tier at that position, and they still went for maybe secondary or tertiary guys at that position. Were you surprised when, aside from Edmonds, the numbers seem to be deflated on inside linebackers, and the Steelers still didn't go for that second batch of guys at inside linebacker?
To a degree, yes, and to a degree, no, Tim. I think, you know, Matt Williamson and I talked about this on our show, that, you know, I think that the Steelers have been aggressively prudent. And by that, I mean, I think they went into this knowing, okay, here's what we want to spend on this position, and here's what we want to spend on that position, and we're not going to go above that number. And there's enough guys out there that if this guy doesn't want to play for that number, well, we'll just move on to the next one. And so I think, you know, that's been part of this. The inside linebacker market in particular, since you brought that one up, I mean, there were 20 guys out there who had started last year on different teams who were free agents this year. You know, so you could make that kind of move in free agency, and there'll be guys who are drafted in this, you know, this year who will add to that market as well. And, you know, maybe push some more guys out the door. You just don't know, you know, but I think when you look at how the draft affects free agency, you know, this year, it's not necessarily a very deep defensive tackle draft. Well, you saw some of the defensive tackles get paid big money as free agents because of that. You know, the cornerback, on the other hand, is very deep in this year's draft. And so some of those cornerbacks didn't get the contracts. You know, people were looking at that and going, oh, these cornerbacks are going to get $15 million. That didn't happen. You know, they signed more modest deals for the most part. And so I think teams got a good grasp on what was available in the draft and just looked at some of these other positions and said, hey, we don't need to spend a big money on these guys in free agency. We can afford to wait and get one in the draft.
Part of the reason why I was hoping they would be more willing to spend on particularly Edwards is that he seems to be pretty good in coverage. I haven't heard glowing things about either of the two guys they signed in coverage. What are you hearing about Roberts and Holcomb in that context?
That's not necessarily Roberts' strong point. He's a downhill guy. You know, he's one of these guys that, you know, see ball, hit ball. But I do think people are selling Cole Holcomb short. You know, I think a lot of times with these linebackers coming out of college, and you see, I mean, we just saw with Devin Bush, the biggest thing that they struggle with early in their career is how to deal with coverages, because very much so like the tight end position, where it takes tight ends a few years to kind of get their grasp on everything. You're asked to do a lot of things at inside linebacker. First, you have to play the run. You know, then they're going to run six guys through your zone. If you're playing zone, if you play a man, you're playing typically against somebody who might be a little bit more athletic than you are, but you've got to be able to have the guile to get by. So I think that, you know, first of all, you have to have the athletic traits, and Cole Holcomb has that. The second thing is you can't just look at the numbers for coverage on linebackers. Well, he gave up 14 catches on 18 targets. Well, no kidding. They were all 6-yard catches. I mean, you and I could make those passes if we were out there. You're not going to get stops on those things, but do you get the tackles? Do you get your hands on the football? Do you make plays? And he does those things, forces fumbles, gets pass breakups, gets interceptions. He's a 4-5 guy, you know, coming out of North Carolina. So, you know, and he's been very active as a tackler. He averaged 10 tackles a game last year. You know, is he a world beater at inside linebacker? No, but you're not paying him that kind of money. And I think he's an upgrade over what they had there last year.
You pointed this out on Twitter. In fact, I highlighted your tweet today at the Trib and something I posted about how it's not necessarily a usual stop for Mike Tomlin and what had been Kevin Colbert, now Omar Khan, to hit Iowa on their stops of locations for pro days. But there are two guys along the defensive front in Campbell and Vinesse that are noteworthy. There's a tight end there that's noteworthy too, that they might be looking at. And I guess I'm leading with this angle, Dale, to segue into some draft talk, because I'm curious what you think their vision of what the front seven looks like. I mean, we've talked about inside linebacker, but what do they think they should be evolving into along the front with their outside linebackers and their defensive linemen? Is that going to be more hybrid? I mean, like, if a guy like Van Ness is there, would they go for him, and where would he play? Because I'm seeing a lot of 275-pound, 3-4-ish, 4-3-ish tweeners. And when I say tweeners, and I don't mean tweeners in their system, not tweeners that they used to get because it was their system. It's almost the other way around now.
Yeah, it's the old Mike Vrabel situation where, you know, when they drafted Mike Vrabel back in the day, one year they try to make him a defensive end, and then the next year he's a linebacker. And then the next year he's back to being a defensive end, and they keep telling him, gain 20 pounds, lose 20 pounds, gain 20 pounds. Next thing you know, his contract's up, and he's a New England Patriot. I think you do have to you have to have a plan if you draft guys like that. To me, they've already kind of got a guy like that in DeMarvin Leal. I don't know that you want to have an entire roster of those kind of guys. That makes it, you can have one or two hybrid type guys who do nothing but rush the passer. And I've said for years, I don't have a problem. You know, they play so much nickel and dime now where your outside linebackers are de facto defensive ends that if you went out and just got an outside or a true 4-3 edge defensive end guy, who's 270 pounds, and said, "Okay, you're our designated pass rusher on we go to this nickel and dime package, and you put him outside your defensive tackles. You know he's doing the same job that the outside linebackers do. You're not going to ask him to drop a whole lot in those situations. He's probably going to rush the passer 95% of the time, and if that's what he does well and he makes your pass rush better, so be it." That being said, I don't know that Van Ness necessarily, it would be in their plans. I think he's certainly an intriguing athlete, and he's been very productive. Do you ask him, do you try to play him at outside linebacker? Do you put him at defensive line? Tell him to put on 15 pounds? Again, you're back to that Vrabel situation. As far as Campbell, I love Campbell. I think he's like a center in basketball. You know, a 6'5 inside linebacker. He's going to block a lot of shots at the rim in terms of the passing game. And he really moved very well at the scouting combine. He's kind of the unicorn at that position this year. Very much everybody wanted to sign Tremaine Edmonds, in free agency. Well, this guy's the same size, is actually bigger than Tremaine Edmonds. So, there's some ability there. They have the tight end at Iowa. They've got a couple of defensive backs that are pretty good there as well. And that's what Mike Tomlin does every year. He tries to go where he can get the most bang for his buck and see the most prospects. And that Iowa defense was legit last year. I mean, you didn't score on Iowa. They may not have scored any points either, but you didn't score on Iowa. There's a lot of 10-7 games being played out there.
Yeah, they were a good underbet every week. I know that. do they want a nose tackle? And when I say nose tackle, I mean like not necessarily Casey Hampton, but do they want Javon Hargrave when he was here? What do they want along the defensive line now?
I think ideally you'd like to. I mean, if you could find another guy like Javon Hargrave, you'd love to have that. I think that whoever you get in that position had better be able to rush the passer a little bit. To the point where, hey, you're only going to dress five defensive linemen most of the time on game days. So, if you have somebody go down, that nose tackle, even if he's a true nose tackle, had better be able to go out there and get some pass rush pressure if something happens. And, they need to get younger there. As much as we hate to say it, Cam Hayward's not getting any younger. And, yes, they've used some draft picks on some of those guys in recent years. But they haven't used a premium pick on it. Leal was a third-round pick last year. The last time he was the first guy they drafted on day two since Stephon Tuitt back in 2014. That's been a while. If they took a defensive lineman, a true defensive lineman, a guy who's going to play defensive end / defensive tackle in their system, I'm all for that as well.
I should have pointed this out when we were speaking earlier about the similarities of what they're doing this year versus last, to the degree, Dale, that they signed Ogunjobi twice. They even did it with the same guy twice, So.
I like that signing because
it was a little bit heftier than I thought it would be. But I mean, I'm not put off by it.
But that was the going rate for those guys. I mean, guys were getting a lot more money, in the open market. Who had quite frankly lesser careers. I know Cleveland signed one for, $14 million a year. That's got seven career sacks or something like that. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know if that's exactly what you need. Ogunjobi's been here. He knows the defense. I think last year was still kind of a recovering from that foot injury issue that he had. He didn't practice a lot in training camp, and then he had a toe issue. So I don't know that we got to see the best of him last year. But he's still a 28-year-old player that can get the job done.
Were you surprised Jack was let go?
In a way, yes. But it was a big number. I think, when they released him, I thought, well, that was one of the things, if you could do better than him on the open market, or at least match what he brings to the table, then, the $8 million that you saved by releasing him, I thought, could be used more prudently elsewhere. That's why, the situation was the exact opposite with Mitch Trubisky. If you've seen some of the quarterbacks, contracts that have signed for guys who are backups, they're all getting $8 million a year. They're getting the Trubisky contract. So, you had to save some money somewhere, and Jack was the guy who had that price tag on him.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, the dream is dead. Josh Dobbs not coming back to the Steelers, going to the Browns instead. What are they?
Well, maybe next year.
Yeah, it could happen again. Right, exactly. If Trubisky does stay for one more year, then they've got an opening there. Maybe Dobbs does come back to Pittsburgh. What about Rudolph? Where's he going to wind up, do you think?
That's a good question. I don't know. He may not sign anywhere until after the draft. I think you'll see some teams make some more moves, as this continues to develop. I still like Mason. I think he could be a good number two somewhere. We'll see where he winds up at, and maybe if it goes long enough, maybe he comes back here.
Yeah, I didn't rule it out. I wrote about that. They didn't rule it out, although I do think they'd like to explore just about every other option first before that becomes the case. If it's not Mason that comes back, do they spend like a late round draft choice or bring in a preferred rookie free agent as a developmental number three, kind of like what Oladokun was when he got here? I mean, like, do they get that kind of profile guy?
Probably both. I mean, you need four to go to camp, and that's just what they do, and they believe in keeping three. So, why not take two bites out of the apple and bring a couple of rookies in? You've got two veteran guys here. Now, I'm using air quotes here. I know we're talking on radio here, so it's a little different. But Kenny Pickett's your established starter. Trubisky's your number two, and why not have two rookies battle it out for that third spot? See who sticks, and then if Trubisky's not back next year, maybe the rookie steps into that number two role. If he's not ready yet, then you go sign somebody else.
Dale Olley with us from Steelers.com, my co-host on the pregame show on DVE before every Steelers game, and of course with the drive on SNR with Matt Williamson. On the offensive side of the ball, are they likely to open up with Samalu as one guard, Daniels as the other, Cole as the center, and then Herbig as the second guard? Is Dotson out of a job? How do you think that's going to play out?
I mean, that was my initial thinking on it. If you look at Dotson's got 1 year left on his contract. They're not going to release him or anything like that. You can certainly carry that guy on the roster, and he has value. So the way I see it is they have five guys for three spots, and you roll the ball out there. It's kind of like in Batman when the Joker says, "Hey, we're going to have tryouts," breaks the pool stick in half, and throws him in there for the two guys. Figure it out. That's what training camp is for. And since you have five of them, if somebody gets hurt, now you're down to four, but you still have one too many. And to expect them to make it through the entire 2023 season like they did in 2022, where the same five guys start all 17 games, it's probably unrealistic. So the more depth that you have at that position is probably the better. And I think they've definitely upgraded their depth at those positions. The interesting thing is Daniels has experience at center. So does
Yeah, I think that's sort
Samalu.
of forgotten about. I mean, I feel funny bringing that up because I don't think you mess with what works, but
Nor do I, but
I suppose
you have
that's an
that.
option. And
Yeah.
now you've got two guys between him and Samalu that you don't need necessarily the center guard swing guy. You can keep two guards and then find a tackle to swing to both positions if you want. Are they interested in getting a tackle, Dale, or not? Are we making too much of that?
I think you draft one at some point, whether that be in the first round, if that presents itself, or in one of the later rounds. This isn't a bad tackle draft. I think it's a little top heavy on the interior offensive line. Again, that's why you're seeing some of the moves that they're making. But I do think there are some veteran tackle or some tackles in this draft, probably into the third round, that could come in and develop for you. And hey, if worse comes to worse, you go out and re-sign Matt Filer.
I brought that
That's always a
up. That's one I
always a
floated.
possibility too. Yeah, so there are guys out there that can do that. They had a guy like Trent Scott last year. You can find those guys even after the draft. So you go into the draft, you look and say, hey, we'd like to draft a young one to develop. We know Dan Moore's going into year three here. We'll see what goes on with the other guys. But it's never a bad business to draft, offensive tackles and hope to develop them. I mean, they can find uses for those guys.
Finally, Dale, let's go to where it all started. Well, we're kind of working backwards here, I guess, but Patrick Peterson at corner. It was funny when they signed the two guards. I joked that people were acting like they signed John Hanna twice. Well, when Cam Sutton left, people were acting like they lost Mel Blount. And then when they signed Patrick Peterson, they acted like they signed him back again. And Patrick Peterson is certainly a lot closer than Cam Sutton is or will ever be, but look, for 1 year, I could see this being a situation where the Steelers have a better cornerback than the Detroit Lions do.
I think that's certainly a possibility if you're looking at what he can bring in terms of his above the neck knowledge and what he can add to that room. And do they draft one? I assume that they're going to draft one. This is a great cornerback draft. So if he can be that mentor for one of those young guys, and I think he's a guy that you can potentially play at one of the safety positions for times here and there. You can drop him down in the box and let him play, dime linebacker and things of that nature. The more I can get Patrick Peterson's eyes on the football and watch the quarterback, I think the better he is because of what he can do, his ball skills and things of that nature. He said it at his press conference. He said, if you want me to go out there and run man to man with pick somebody, Ja'Marr Chase, 50 times in a game, that's probably not the best use of him. But if you want him to play some zone and keep his eyes on the quarterback and take the ball away, well, he showed last year he can still do that. And so, I think the way that they play coverages, mixing and matching and playing some man, playing some zone, playing some matchup zone, I think it fits his skill set well. I think he's a technician out there. He's one of the best in the past decade to play the position. He's 33, but again, I think the above the neck stuff that he adds to this defense, especially if they draft a young one, which I expect them to do, maybe they draft two. I think that has a trickle down effect on that room as a whole. And I like Cam Sutton, but I'm with you. I mean, the people who were gnashing their teeth, the Steelers had a number in mind, and Detroit went way over that. And Cam Sutton's now, his average contract is the 16th highest for a cornerback in the NFL. Does anybody think he's one of the top 16 cornerbacks in the NFL? I like him. He's a good player, but I don't want to pay him that kind of money.
Dale, thanks. Appreciate it. Maybe we'll catch up again sometime before the draft, and we'll continue to listen to you on SNR and read you at Steelers.com all the way up until then.
Sounds good, Tim. I'll talk to you.
Dale Lally, my broadcast partner on DVE, listen to us in advance of every Steelers game during the preseason and regular season. Like I said, listen to Dale on SNR with Matt Williamson, and you can also check him out at Steelers.com regularly. This is Breakfast with Ben's.